so that they may solve their common problem and help others to achieve sobriety. The fellowship was founded by a pair of apparently hopeless drunks who found out they could stay sober by carrying a message of recovery to other alcoholics. They attributed their newfound sobriety to the spiritual experience of a higher power. After spending her life taking care of Bill when he was too drunk to take care of himself, Lois, of course, was delighted when he got sober, but things were still not quite right. One fateful day, Bill asked Lois if she was ready to go to an AA meeting with him. Lois threw a shoe at him and exclaimed, "Damn your old meetings!" The incident led her to realize she had been, as she put it, wallowing in self-pity. She writes, "I resented the fact that Bill and I never spent any time together anymore, and that I was left alone while he was off scouting up new drunks or working with old ones. I felt on the outside of a very tight little clique of alcoholics that no mere wife could enter, and the early members of AA were almost entirely men. Not so anymore. My pride was hurt by the fact that a friend, another alcoholic, had been able to do for Bill in a short time what I had tried and failed to do all our married years." Lois recognized that she had a problem. It would have been easy to blame everything on Bill and keep chucking shoes in his direction. But what was she to do? Her loneliness and resentment and hurt pride were not going to go away on their own. Here's where Lois had an incredible insight. As Bill worked with the other members of the group that became Alcoholics Anonymous, they adopted a 12-step program of recovery that involved recognizing that the maintenance of sobriety required the assistance of a power greater than themselves. It could be God, the AA group, Buddha, the universe, a ceiling fan, whatever. Rigorous, honest self-examination shared with another person. Recognition that they couldn't overcome their defects of character on their own. Making amends to those they had harmed wherever possible. Continued self-examination, prayer and meditation, and a commitment to assist other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. In other words, a radical program of self-help. Lois came to understand that life with active alcoholics leads their loved ones to develop their own methods of coping, and often these coping mechanisms are just as unhealthy as those of the alcoholic. The same sorts of self-deception, resentment, anger, fear, feelings of separation from others that hinder the recovery of alcoholics also hindered her own spiritual growth. Like her husband Bill, Lois had to recognize that she too was powerless over alcohol and her life had become unmanageable. Lois came to believe that she could take the 12 steps that AA used to grow spiritually in order to overcome her own shortcomings. Sauce for the gander was sauce for the goose. It became apparent that Lois was not the only spouse, sibling, child, or friend of an alcoholic who needed to find a way to grow spiritually beyond the pain that they had been caused by the alcoholic in their lives. Eventually, she co-founded Al-Anon, a 12-step recovery group for the loved ones and others who are injured by someone else's alcoholism. Over the years, Al-Anon members have developed additional insights about their recovery from somebody else's alcoholism. Among their most important ideas are boundaries, detachment, and forgiveness. Many Al-Anons find that over years of dealing with an alcoholic in their lives, they've lost track of who they are. In the book, How Al-Anon Works, they describe the problem this way. Having interceded for so long on the alcoholic's behalf, constantly reacting, worrying, pleasing, covering up, smoothing over, bailing him or her out of trouble, we've often taken on responsibilities that don't rightfully belong to us. The result is that we lose the sense of where we leave off and the alcoholic begins. Detachment is the solution to this obliteration of boundaries. How Al-Anon Works defines detachment to mean separating ourselves emotionally and spiritually from other people. And in the case of someone with a disease of alcoholism, it means seeing them as separate from the disease. The deceptions, blame, gaslighting, weaponized resentment, hostage taking that alcoholics employ are manifestations of their disease. This can be the case for sober alcoholics too, especially in early sobriety. Just because they've quit drinking does not mean that they've lost all the defects of character that arose from their alcoholism. As recovering people say, I lost the alcohol, but I still have the isms. Both alcoholics and their loved ones have to learn to identify and distinguish themselves from the toxic behaviors and attitudes that arose from alcoholism. And for both, this is a lot of work and it takes a lot of time. But the recovery of the Al-Anon does not need to be and is not contingent upon the recovery of the alcoholic. Beyond recognizing that alcoholism is the source of much problem behavior, detachment involves action steps. The support and experience of a fellow Al-Anon member is often essential to achieving detachment. Another recovery slogan is, I don't go into my mind alone, it's a dangerous neighborhood. It really helps to work with someone who's a little bit further down that path to serenity. This is an essential part of any 12-step program, and I think of any spiritual program whatsoever, personally, but that's my opinion. For one thing, it's necessary for the Al-Anon to have help to distinguish detachment from both minimizing and rationalizing the alcoholic's behavior, or their own, and overcoming the hostility and resentment toward the alcoholic that keeps one a prisoner. So detachment is an act of love. It is a necessary and vital act of self-care, but it is also part of a respectful, accepting, reality-based way of coping with the alcoholic. Al-Anon members find that detachment is the pathway to forgiveness. As it says in How Al-Anon Works, resentment will do nothing except tear us apart inside. No one ever found serenity through hatred. No one ever truly recovered from the effects of alcoholism by harboring anger or fear or by holding on to grudges. Hostility keeps us tied to the abuses of the past. Al-Anon members learn compassion for the parents, spouses, children, friends of alcoholics. Now, the ideas of Al-Anon remind me of some familiar principles. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, and encouragement to spiritual growth. And for those of you who are new around here, those are the fundamental principles of Unitarian Universalism, or some of them. Ultimately, forgiveness of the alcoholic or other who has done us harm is part of self-forgiveness as well. How Al-Anon Works explains, we don't forgive the actions another person has chosen because it was never our job to judge the other person for those actions in the first place. Instead, we forgive when we acknowledge our common humanity with everyone, even the person we feel most entitled to condemn. In this spirit, we can even forgive ourselves, no matter what we've done or how guilty or shame-filled we may feel. We, too, deserve love. Forgiveness for members of Al-Anon, as for Eva Kaur, is something we do for ourselves. A guy named John Mundy reminds us, forgiveness means giving up all hope of a better past. It means that we do not allow our happiness to be contingent upon the recovery, atonement, transformation, or even departure of the wrongdoer. Forgiveness starts with a willingness to consider forgiveness and then patient, slow progress. Even though I can testify that forgiveness is worth it, even though I try to practice it every day, it is still hard work. Henri Nouwen, a Catholic priest and a wonderful writer, has expressed my feelings well, and I quote, I am struck by how I cling to my own wounded self. Why do I think so much about the people who have offended me or hurt me? Why do I allow them to have so much power over my feelings and emotions? Why can't I simply be grateful for the good they did and forget about their failures and mistakes? It seems that in order to find my place in life, I need to be angry, resentful, or hurt. It even seems that these people give me my identity by the very ways in which they wounded me. Part of me is the wounded one. It is hard to know who I am when I can no longer point my finger at someone else who is the cause of my pain. Nouwen goes on to say, forgiveness is the name of love among people who love poorly. The hard truth is that all of us love poorly. We need to forgive and be forgiven every day, every hour, unceasingly. That is the great work of love among the fellowship of the weak, that is the human family. Forgiveness is much easier when we recognize that it is a work of love in fellowship. Last week, the Eastern Orthodox Church began Lent, as they always do, with Forgiveness Sunday. A part of this service is a ceremony of forgiveness in which each member of a congregation faces every other member, one at a time, and says, "God forgives you, and I forgive you," and follows up with a kiss on the cheek. Now, I suggest that if we make the God part and the kissing part optional, we might wish to institute a Forgiveness Sunday in this church. I don't know about you, but I would have to ask for forgiveness for many things. As I said, I have some experience with both forgiveness and being forgiven, as we all do. Most of my education in forgiveness comes from my experiences with alcoholism and recovery from alcoholism. My alcoholism is not a secret, but I'm grateful to say it's been nearly 30 years since my last drink, and that is largely due to my willingness to share experience, strength, and hope with my fellow sufferers and the people they have caused suffering to. Wisdom speaks to me through drunks. I've done a lot of work on forgiveness, but I often fail to transcend my need to be right, to be approved of, to win. My pride and ego and fear get in the way. To those of you I've hurt or disappointed when I worried more about being right than being kind, my apologies. I'm as in need of forgiveness and forgiving as anyone else around here. Hymn writer John Bell lists a few of the acts for which I need to seek forgiveness. Perhaps they will sound familiar to you. The words of hope I often fail to give. The prayers of kindness buried by my pride. The signs of care I argued out of sight. The narrowness of vision and of mind. The need for other folks to serve my will. And every word and silence meant to hurt. These I lay down. And I do it one day at a time. May it be so.